guys just came in for something to eat, that's all I think.
Ben is in.
Yeah, I'm giving that.
He and Craig are having a.
Yeah, I figured. I can't make it later for my wife.
How's Everest?
Two now.
James Everest. Did I get his name right?
Everest.
Everest. I got it right the first time.
Yep, like the mountain.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
Hours and days does he have left?
Oh, good.
I think Janice said in last week she was in jail.
What did you get Janice got?
I don't remember.
I don't think I'm so lucky.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Hey.
Chief.
It's like I haven't seen you for very recently.
Chief what?
He came.
Oh.
He's good.
Did people go up together or did you kind of do your own?
We, three of us went together. Oh, five. So that felt good. We had five people. We went together at first and she was building a flag. Yeah, we were real fast. And they kind of talked about it.
You know how well journalism pays and all that.
Well, I'm sure. It's a thankless job, I'm sure.
First we come here and see what's going on and see if we can.
We had to wait at three members and look at Karen and I was like,
it's a great project.
What's on the agenda?
And also just asking about the fire. I think there's people here.
So
I
don't have to wait till August or
Christmas.
Okay.
Just get going, whenever you want.
Okay. I'm Sherry, by the way. Community Development Director.
Oh, okay, great. And my name is Linda Bailey.
Sorry.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome.
I was hoping you'd take another minute.
Sir, journalist here.
Oh, great.
Do you want me to call right now? We are
recording. Will you be careful, Craig, because she's a journalist. We don't want her quoting you on anything. Great, Craig.
You ready for some quotes?
Yeah, you bet.
If it wasn't for passport planning, this police department would be 100%.
Your police department is 100%. 100% awesome, right?
We'd be 100% crime free in this city. You can call me.
Steve Harder.
Hi.
Hey, how is it?
Good. How are you? You can pass it up.
Good.
You had all the public.
Yeah, I'm from the City Journal.
I don't know. Ken, do we know the status of Lisa or Natalie?
No, I haven't spoken to either one of them.
Well, I suspect they'll be coming then.
Are you?
They will.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
There's a monthly one that should be going out.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Okay, let's get going here. Welcome, everyone. This is the work session for the May 17th City Council meeting. And the first item is Chief Stone is going to talk about how much money he's going to get back to the city.
Yes, that's exactly the
thrill. Yay.
That's not what I was prepared for, so I will just hand this over to you.
Jake will turn off.
Well, thank you. I was trying to think of the five cities that we cover, and obviously the county, but we don't have to go to the county's city or council meetings. But it's a long time before I get in front of the councils, and I really appreciate this opportunity. And so what we spoke to Ken about and Mayor Horrocks was just this presentation was something that we came up with when all the new members or even the existing members of the council came in, so we could kind of educate on the fire service. And it was a difficult time. Obviously, some could look at it and see we were trying to do everything. But it's so other than getting the opportunity to go out and put on fire gear and cut up cars and climb up the ladder, which we did, which you're welcome to any time you can make that arrangement. This will just go over kind of an overview of the fire department. And so you understand what you pay for, what we get, what we have, and things like that. So, but I really appreciate the opportunity to come in front of you. And I will be, as soon as I get done with this, I have to run to Centerville City Council and do a fireworks. They're not as up to date with, like, North Salt Lake is, just have an ordinance, we have to approve it every year. So I really appreciate that you guys have that, and could just follow that every year. So with that said, let's get going. We got, I don't know if you looked at this, Dan, I know you.
I did.
We'll see how it goes, but please stop me anytime. If you have questions, I can answer anything from running the system to the back. Introductions, obviously, I'm Dane Stone, the fire chief. I've been the fire chief for, since 2020. Jeff Bassett was the fire chief prior to that, and then he decided to one day call me in his office and say, I want to retire, and then he's gone. So, a little warning, I thought we were better friends than that. I still am mad at him. I don't take his call right off the bat anymore. But, during the meeting, I also have, and I'll show you on our flow chart, but introduced my other executive staff and our financial director and stuff. And show that. This will just go over a department overview. We'll talk about the financials. This is for 2021, so not obviously 2022 or 2023, we just worked out. So our calls for service, and then I just want to show you what our stations, our apparatus, and equipment look like, okay, so you kind of understand how it flows. South Davis Metro Fire Agency was created in 2005. We brought South Davis Fire District and Bountiful City Fire Department together. Before that, South Davis Fire District created or protected North Salt Lake, West Bountiful, Woods Cross, and Senator, an unincorporated Davis County. Bountiful City had their own fire department. So we would interact very well together, but we had definitely boundaries that we could. So we had a fire station here, and if you remember the old City Hall, the fire station was attached to the City Hall. In fact, Paul and I were reminiscing about it. I spent 10 years in that fire station. This was my first full-time firefighter assignment, was here in North Salt Lake, so I have there's some love here for me. I'm also a North Salt Lake resident, so that's even better. So. The primary reason why we merged was to take the paramedic service away from Davis County and provide paramedic service for the South Davis County area. Up until then, Davis County Sheriff's Office was running the paramedic service for our area. So we ran the ambulance service or the Bountiful, but if we needed advanced life care, the paramedics came from Davis County. We took that on, and that merger was, we were able to do that. We were in a local agreement between the cities and the county at 2005. In 2017, we transitioned to service area, and primarily one is we became our own taxing entity. Before that, it was difficult to, we couldn't bond. We had a bond with the Inverno, what do they call that? Anyway, well, it doesn't matter. And it just gave us the ability to bond and tax. And we'll go over financing, how that applies. But our basis is we needed a new fire station in Centerville. We also did taxes for additional staffing, and then for the large, expensive fire truck, ladder truck. So, and that's clearly really what our the property tax paid for. So, these are the cities and the unincorporated Davis County area that we serve. So it's we have five fire stations. We'll go through those, but obviously everything that we do. So. I am governed by a board of directors. Mayor Horrocks is on that board. It's usually the mayor of each city, and obviously they can appoint just like any other board, but it's the mayor of each city. And then one of the county commissioners, and Commissioner Stevenson, Bob Stevenson, is on that board with us. The sworn in as fire commissioners, we meet every third Monday. Usually we try to meet at 5 o'clock, but Tiff at the rec center always trumps me, and we don't meet till like 5:30 or something. So Tiff and I have words. Works for me to have words, but other than that, it's, you know, we're social with each other. They establish our policy. We give them policies. They set our tax rate. And issue bonds, approve budgets, and a bunch of financials, and then I notify them with the and also with the city manager. So, administrative committee. In 2017, when we merged and became a service district, we created the city. The board directed the city managers to become part of our administrative committee. And so, Ken sits on that administrative committee. For every city manager. Of every city, and then the county assessor sits on that as well. they are our budget officers. So they give us what the city's contribution is going to be. This year was really nice. They kind of came up and said, hey, we're going to keep being able to give you this much percentage. And then we work our budget within that, plus our property tax. So the city has an assessment that they give to us, plus our property tax. There are two ways that we're funded, plus our homeowners fees that we pay. And we can talk about that. But we have a board. It's usually whoever's the board chair of the commissioners is usually the admin is the same. So this time it's Wes Bountiful. Mayor Romney is the board chair of the commissioners. And then Dwayne Huffman is their city manager. He is so Ken had the privilege of doing it last year when we went to TNT and it was enjoyable.
Really fun.
So I think it really created a good bond between Ken and I.
Foxhole buddies.
So just some detail for us, right? So we're a full service fire department. Fires, medicals, hazmat, technical rescue, fire prevention, public education. So we serve an estimated population of about 120, and that's daytime, coming into the populated areas. We have 45 square miles of area that we cover, up the mountain, and then down on the western side I like to call it the wetlands area, but 5 fire stations. We rotate between 98 and 99 full-time employees. I have about 10 administrative staff, including myself, fire prevention, and some daytime staff, and then 89 operational staff, which are the firefighters that are working at fire stations and stuff like that. So, fully staffed. During the day, we have 28 firefighters on, plus a battalion chief. And we'll kind of go over what that means, but what we normally run is 23 firefighters and the battalion chief, because we have a minimum staffing that we do, and we're not covering sick leave and vacation and things like that. We'll go down to a minimum staffing level. We run a 3 platoon system, so Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie platoon, and they work a 48-96 schedule. So the firefighters get on. So today is B shift, B platoon. So they came on this morning at 7 a.m. and they leave Thursday morning at 7 a.m. and C platoon comes on. So that's where you get the 96 hours off. Is A shift comes on and they work 2 days. B shift comes on, they work 2 days. So C shift has those A and B days off as 46, that's probably 96 hours. So the firefighters sleep, eat, work out, everything is fire station. We have a lot of back and forth with the police officers. Because I have so much respect for Chief Black, I won't get into that, but the other police officers, Chrissy Brownsville, I have no problems with Chief Wheeler going back and forth, but Chief Black can have a good reputation. But, the comment is it would be nice to be a firefighter and sleep all the time. It's like, well, it's either sleeping or sitting in your car eating a donut. You determine what you're going to do. We know that's not the truth here in North Salt Lake.
Correct.
We say that.
We sleep too.
We just opened a new donut shop across the street.
It's a great schedule. The firefighters really enjoy it. We moved to this. We used to work a different schedule where you work what we call a Kelly, where you work like, say, when I was here at the station, you'd work Monday, 24 hours, off Tuesday, work Wednesday, 24 hours, off Thursday, work Friday, 24 hours, and then you had 4 days off. We switched to this schedule several years back just because of sick leave and stuff, and it looked like it was a better schedule. Most of the state of Utah does it, and so it was easier to do it. But they love it until they have to work Christmas Eve and Christmas. That 48 hours, we don't let them switch it around. So you get Christmas Eve and Christmas, and then the next year you'll get at least one of those again. So you might not get both, but it's just what it is. So, but they do like it. So they spend a third of their life in the fire station. So this is our flow chart or our organizational chart. So obviously with the board of trustees, myself, Nikki Dandurand is our secretary. Dr. Swiler is our medical director. So all of our EMTs and paramedics work under his licensure for our drugs and our protocol. So he oversees that. He's an ER doc at Lakeview Hospital. And so we have good communication with him, and he reviews our EMS policies and things like that. So Chief Powers, Dave Powers, is the deputy chief over administration. And then Chief Stewart is the Deputy Chief of Operations. So Chief Powers oversees our policies, our hiring, a lot of our HR stuff, and things like that. Chief Stewart, Greg Stewart, does the operations of fire EMS, and the battalion chiefs report to him. So he does all that other stuff and logistics and things like that. Jessica Hardy is our Finance Director. Casey Borwaller was our Fire Marshal. He just left and decided to go pursue making fishing lures. So totally different than the fire service, but you know, it's his dream and that's what he wants to do. So we will be updating that. Amanda Mertens is underneath him and she's our Fire Inspector. So she does a lot of the new building construction inspections and things like that. So. Matt Shoup, our Division Chief, is over training for the entire department. He now has last year we hired a training captain underneath him to help him. That's all of our certifications. So we have to recertify our EMS, our EMT, and paramedic every 2 years. And all of our fire certs, and all of our hazard material certs, and all of our tech rescue certs. And Matt oversees all that. So it's a hefty job for 100 people. And then the three battalion chiefs, so A Platoon, B Platoon, and C Platoon, Mike, Jeff, and Steve. They oversee the daily operations of all five fire stations, and they're the five captains that are at those stations, there is who they report to. So when we have a major incident, these are the first chief officers on scene, and then one of us will arrive to help them if it's a major. So at the landslide, right, unfortunately for me, I live right there, so I was close, I was the first one there. I tried not to be. But it's a little hard to delay that, right? If you say a train had stopped me or anything like that, it was just, I was there.
So you're a resident of our fair city?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yep. I live off at Eagle Ridge Drive on Canyon View Circle. So,
Who lives on Eagle Ridge Drive?
Greg Stewart. Okay. Yeah, right across from Fox.
Yeah.
Yep. So he lives right there. So that's the organizational chart.
Question on that.
Yeah.
So in my world, let's say we had a real issue going on, it would be all hands on deck. Our engineers from other buildings would respond. And so do you ever have a situation where like all your battalion chiefs would show up and off-duty firefighters, you know?
Yeah.
Like we had a wildfire.
I think the biggest one right now would be, let's take the gun range fire. So the gun range fire came in at roughly around 1 o'clock in the morning. Greg Stewart was the battalion chief on A shift at that time. So that call came in, my phone goes off, I see the call, I turn my radio on, it sits by my bed, and I hear, you know, report of a fire, possibly a campfire up above the beach. Immediately, all I start thinking is, please be a campfire, please be a campfire, right? And Chief Stewart arrives first, and with the engine up on Bountiful Boulevard, we have that engine up, we have a station up there on Bountiful Boulevard. And I hear the report, and they're like, this fire is going, right? We do have a large grass fire going. I get out of bed, get changed, I drive up there. By the time we were done, Chief Powers, myself, Matt Shoup, Steve Moss, most of the department was there. The only person that wasn't was Jeff Bassett. And that's because he was in Bear Lake. And I was like, hey,
so we got rid of him.
Yeah. And we're like, hey, you missed that fire? You're out. And, no.
To retire.
So everybody comes. We have administrative call. So myself, Dave, Matt, and Greg take administrative call once a week or every other week. So I take it, I'm on call this week. So if a fire comes in or a major call comes in, I respond and sit or help assist these in one of the situations, and then if it goes any bigger, then the other two will come in. So we're always on call. We were talking about Juneteenth, I've never had a 4th of July off. I've never had a Memorial Day off. I've never had a 24th off. I'm looking forward to the day I retire and I can enjoy the 4th of July. It'll be a great day. I think I'll finally celebrate our independence, but I don't. It's not, but that's just part of the job, and it's just something that you come with, and it's, you know, we are always, my phone is always on me, my radio is always on me somewhere. So
Chief, you might want to explain, if we had a major incident here in South Davis, what happens to other departments nearby? Do they roll in to help us with medical calls? How does that
Yeah, that's great, Ken, thanks. So, the gun range fire, we had 11 different departments associated with it. All the way up to Northview, which is up in Plain City, right? Came down, Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, we had some departments from Salt Lake City. We technically, right now, most of the time when we are out of apparatus or out of personnel because of call, Salt Lake City comes in because of their closeness to us. Farmington, we call them once in a while, but it's a bottleneck right there. So the other departments in the Davis County area, we don't call them as often because Salt Lake City will come in with no problems. We have a great working relationship with Salt Lake City. Our firefighters are trained with theirs, so we interact very well together. But there is no hesitation from any department in the county or Salt Lake City to offer aid at any time. At any one time, Friday we had a structured fire in Centerville, and on top of that, so once we have a structured fire or a major call, medical calls don't ever stop, right? People don't go, hey, you can't have a heart attack right now because I know the fire department's on a call right now, so they can't come. So that those calls still happen. So during that fire, we had two ambulances out in Salt Lake City transporting. One was transporting the primaries, the other was transporting to IMC. But other than that, every apparatus we had was at that fire because we have to have so many personnel because it's pretty labor intensive. I got on my radio, came down to the fire station, and called for Salt Lake City to send us an apparatus, a paramedic unit, so we could have that. Just then, our units were clearing from those hospitals and were able to get in. But Salt Lake City was like, yep, we'll come in. And so we do, they have our radio channel, and we do get great assistance from them. So, same with police. I mean, we have, the working relationship that we have with the police departments around here is better than any I've ever seen. And Salt Lake City especially, Chief Lee, the chief of Salt Lake City, and I have a regular lunch date, and he's like, we don't have a relationship that you guys do with our police and fire out there. We just don't. And we have a great working relationship with each agency that we deal with here. So I think it's pretty unique, but because I don't hear a lot of fire departments that have that. So, and same with the fire station, the other departments. So, that answer your question?
Yes, thanks.
So just some definitions that you might hear me say, but EMT is emergency medical technician, AEMT and paramedic. So all of our firefighters are either an AEMT or a paramedic, right? So we've moved up, this is the basic level of emergency medical technician, and all of our firefighters have to be AEMT or paramedic. So we run, we have the most paramedics in the county now that the Davis County Sheriff's Office is going away from it, which is good. We send paramedics. We still have a group of firefighters that want to be paramedics. Salt Lake City can't even get their guys to go to paramedic school because they don't want to respond on the man down calls, and that's what they do. We our clientele's different here in Davis County, so our guys are excited to be paramedics, and we send them to school up to Weber State. It's to get there, to become a paramedic, it takes about 2 years of prerequisites, and then you have to do 9 months of school. And so that's obviously a little more advanced than the EMT, but the advanced EMTs are advanced life care as well. So that's our service that we run. These are just some EMS, emergency medical service, BLS, basic life support. That's what an EMT does. Advanced life support are these two. And then you'll hear me talk about an AED. The AED that's right out here in the hallway, right? We put that in, I don't know how long ago, probably 5 years ago or something.
Yeah. Do we have someone that services the batteries regularly?
Yeah, those batteries last forever, but we do have the fire department. We'll take care of it. I know the guys who put it in. So
I just have some in office buildings, and I pay a fortune to have people come in and
put it in
and change the batteries out or something.
Those batteries last.
I'm getting taken.
They're a long time battery. All right. We don't want to see anybody use it.
We should make sure it works. Cause
yeah. As long as there's a green check in there, you're good to go. It's
bad one of those cranks to charge. Yeah.
So these are some of the standards, rules, and laws that we abide by or we focus on, and I'm not going to go in all of them, but you know, we'll talk about the NFPA later in the slideshow. These are just some of the things that we are, the standards that we follow in the fire service. So it's, you know, they're not exciting, so I won't go through it. This is not exciting either, but we'll go through it. So in 2021-22, our budget was $16,206,000. This year, we're at 16.8, roughly, is our budget this year. So this kind of shows you where our revenues are. So our property taxes are 40% of our revenues. The city's assessments are 41%. And then our ambulance revenue is about 17%. And then donations and other sources, it kind of shows you there. And then this is how our property tax is spent out. And we used to, when we first did that, that property tax was meant for the 24 full-time firefighters that we hired at one time. But I think it was the admin committee that really kind of came up with, hey, let's just do, that's about 20% of our department, so let's just do 20%. So that pays for 20% of the salaries, the gear, and everything that's associated with those employees that we have. So we don't keep going, what 24 does this pay for, right? It's just 20% of the employees that we have. So.
Quick question. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just, and I brought this up a few weeks ago. Obviously, when you went to a taxing agency, we were all naive enough to think that meant, you know, we were off the hook. So I'm just, is there any, I know it's tough to give up revenue, but is there any idea or that someday we'll be funding the fire department from property taxes? And in my mind, that's 100% transparent, where mm-hmm. right now we're hiding some of the costs by the city assessment. So. And I know that's kind of loaded.
Ken, okay, you want to take that question? Or you want?
Well, we've been discussing that issue the entire time I've been on the administrative board. I think it's a policy question, and most of the previous board members before your service, Mayor, and most of the previous city managers thought that it was good to have the city assessments represent a city commitment or a city buy-in as a member agency of the service area. And that's kind of how everybody, that's kind of how the admin board looks at it today. Of course, we have new elected officials in it, and it's a completely legitimate way to look at it. If you wanted to fully fund the district with property tax, you certainly could.
Obviously, with some cities, right, of lowering that their tax for us initially and stuff is scary for some cities, right? Where we have to, yeah. And so I think that's always been a kind of a hesitation as well, Mayor. So I don't know if I'll see it in my time. I know that was the whole thing was let's become our own true taxing district. But I think there's some oversight with the way it's done.
And so I think that I'm comfortable with that decision that was made. Respect that.
And I will say, because I've been in a couple of the board meetings and a couple of your meetings previously, they also didn't want to give the service area full taxing. You have full taxing authority, but they really thought the city assessments were also a way to control costs, to have more input rather than less input. And even though it's an unusual formula, I think the mayor's thought this is a way for us to stay in here and make the chiefs work harder for their budget dollars. I guess I don't know. It's hard on Jeff.
Of course, the truth and taxations are pretty good.
I'm two budgets in, and it's, I don't know if it, yeah. So I didn't have gray hair in 2020. And every one of my brothers, I'm the youngest of four, and I'm the only guy that has gray hair. So I don't know what the deal is, but
I imagine you'll have that discussion with the other mayors. I'm sure they're asking that question too.
Okay.
Chief Stone, looking at the history of budgets, you mentioned a 16.2 to a 16.8 increase, which is very reasonable. Is that reflective of the pattern from some of the recent years, or the underlying question is how do your budget increases relate to like consumer price index changes?
So this year it is. I think it's, and I think Ken can speak to this as well. It's incremental every year, right? For This year we did a 6.5% COLA, and then we also had two fire engines to purchase that we wanted to purchase in it. And then, so there is, and we added a daytime staffing personnel, so there were some increases. But every year, last year we added two daytime staffing personnel. When back in 2017, when we added those 24, I was telling Mayor Horrocks, we added a lot of operational staff to cover our fire engine to make sure everybody was on our at our station. what we kind of pushed aside was the daytime staff to manage. Right? So it was us three, myself, Dave, and Greg, or at the time Jeff Bassett, myself, and Dave, to try to do everything. The one thing that we're different than a lot of the other fire departments is they have the HR department at the city, right? They have all the financial directors of the city. We don't have that. And so Dave really does everything when it comes to the administrative side. And Greg was doing the logistics. Greg was, you know, Matt was doing all the training. So we really needed to focus on maybe spreading that out a little bit. So there's been in some cost in there for that. But yes, I would think yearly it's gone that way. Obviously, I had my budget when I was deputy chief of operations. I focused on that. I really didn't focus on that whole entire budget, but I can say that it's been about that same degree every time. Larger, you know, smaller, larger. So.
Thank you.
Just kind of shows breakdown. Obviously, salaries and benefits are our biggest portion. Training, EMS, transfers, and the operation area is large too. So EMS is primarily what we do, and we'll talk about that a little later, but it's a small slice of the pie, but it's because we get that ambulance revenue too. That's a nice little contribution to our
I'm failing my acronym test, so EMS, sorry.
Yeah, Emergency Medical Services.
Okay, got it.
I can go back. You're not. We're almost as bad as the military, but we're not. So some of our capital needs that we focused on. We are the largest department in Davis County, and we're the only department that doesn't have a training center. And so, like I said, right now our recruits go out to Salt Lake City. It's a 15-week academy. We have a great relationship with Salt Lake City. They're trained. The product that we get out of that academy is by far superior than anything we've ever done. I would cut a lot of things in the budget before I would cut that academy than we would get. But we need a training center. Right now, our firefighters go out, they put an orange cone out, they pull the hose and they put the orange cone on the ground. That's the fire that they put out, right? Not the same. And I can tell you, of the many fires that I've been in, an orange cone does not relate to a structure fire, right? And so we are in talks with Holly Frontier. We've been in talks with them. I started conversations with them back in 2011. And just with the different refinery managers there, we finally now, I think, are to a point where we can acquire some land on Fifth South. We want it centrally located so our firefighters can go on while they're on shift, but yet respond if they need to. So, but we're in the process of hitting that. Our vehicle replacement plan, fire engines are expensive, and they're continue to crop, right, to increase. I think it was Commissioner Stevenson asked me, you know, Dane, hey, it's hard to get a vehicle, right, because of the chips, right? There's a shortage of chips and stuff. How many chips are in a fire engine on that? I was like, I don't know. I have no idea. Probably 100 compared to a vehicle, or maybe 1,000, but what used to cost us probably $500,000 on an engine, now costs us $700,000, right? Our ladder truck that we bonded for was $1.5 million, right? So the fire trucks are not cheap. Ambulances are not cheap. When I got on the fire department, an ambulance was about $65,000. It's now $260,000. So they're not cheap to do. Our facility maintenance, we have the Foxborough station down at that station 85. It needs paint, right? We need to keep these up. And our logistics officer that we hired last year is now proactive on those things instead of reactive. So we've actually saved money by having him come in and have that position. That's been really nice. So emergency medical equipment, EMS, is expensive, right? The monitors that you see. This AED will hook up to our monitors. That's the nice thing about this one. So when the patches are on, we can just come in and hook up ours, and then we can get obviously a little bit nicer version, the sleeker model of the AED. But we don't rub the paddles together anymore. I wish we did, because I always loved to do that. That was always really fun. They've taken all the fun stuff away. And so, and then daytime staffing. Now, the daytime staffing, we're doing that. Thanks to board stuff, we've got those daytime staffing, and that's been good. So, very beneficial to us. So I'll call our calls for service. So fire emergency services, what we do, residential fires, commercial fires, industrial fires, right? We have major refineries along the Wasatch Front here, right? The only refinery that we don't have is Marathon, and that's in Salt Lake City. But we cover everyone, Chevron, Big West, and then the not to mention the mom and pop ones that are around that we don't know about, or you don't might not know about, right? So we don't know.
One of them blew up once.
But we have a lot of them. And
moonshine,
yeah, and those two, yeah. So, but it's about 25% of what we do. The other thing is, and I think Chief Blackwell is people like don't if they don't know, call the fire department, right? We still get the calls for hey, my cat's in a tree, right? And I've told Nikki to tell them, hey, I appreciate that. That's a concern, but I have yet to find it. Cat skeleton in a tree. I have an idea. Not one. They do come down. And so, in my that is another joke that the police like to say. But in my career, I've only seen it happen one time, and it was Chief Argyle. It was his neighbor, and out of kindness for her, it was her. You know, she was an elderly woman that needed her cat, and did that for her, but I've never ever done it since then. So I have a hard time putting a $1.5 million truck up to get a cat out when we have other calls at these troops. A little side story, one of our firefighters worked for Unified Fire Authority. They went out and did that and got a cat out of a tree. As he was grabbing the cat, he turned around and got the power line, and it luckily didn't kill him, but still today he's like he's hesitant, right? So he's one of our training captains, and but it was lucky. But he put him in the hospital for a while.
Did it kill the cat?
No.
Curiosity, yeah, not curiosity. The power line that killed the cat.
But that, we try to, you know, fires are few and far between, right? Fire prevention has done a good job. Building construction has done a good job. Smoke detectors are a lifesaver. There's a lot of things that keep us from fighting fires. This is what these guys trained to do, right? These men and women trained to do. And so it's hard for, you know, when we pull up on a fire and they just put out a fire and you see them outside and they're like, yeah. And, you know, high-fiving each other, right? And the homeowners over there are going,
right.
Why are you high-fiving? My house just burned down, right? So we have to talk to them and go, hey, listen, it's perception, what that looks like. But they feel like they've accomplished something, and that's what they train to do so much. So they're getting better. I can't say I've never done it. Through the years, our calls for service. This is always one that's like, what happened here? Wind event. So this is a downslope wind event. All right. So every time we have one of those, our call volume increases substantially. So
we have a graph that looks that way too.
Yeah.
For the wind event.
And there's where everybody is hands on deck, Mayor. That's it, right? Everybody comes out. So unless you're on vacation somewhere, you're responding. So EMS, Emergency Medical Services, is about 75. In 2021, it was 77% of what we do, all right? So medical calls are what we do. So those guys come out of Fire Academy, they're gung-ho, right? I want to fight fire, I want to cut cars, this is what I want to do. We go, okay, this is your fire engine, it's an ambulance. And this is what we do, we respond on calls. And so medical calls consist of obviously crashes on the freeway, falls. We have a ton of assisted living. I don't know why I said assisted, I thought I saved it, but nursing homes and inter-facility transfers. So out of Lakeview Hospital to other hospitals in either University of Utah, IMC, or up in, you know, right in Ogden. So. Just our EMS calls through the years, 2021, we saw an increase in both fire and medical calls at the very end of the year. So it doesn't matter, come January, February, we usually see a decrease. So every time in the fire service, so to speak. So it's a good thing, Not a lot of calls for service, but we always see a call of drop in. Total calls, total EMS and fire calls. Like I said before, we're a full service fire station, fire department. So Station 83, which is in Centerville, is our technical rescue team. So is what we call the dopes on the rope, right? The guys that go down on the rope and stuff, that's their nickname in the fire station. But they're also our water rescue. They are advanced more in our extrication. So when we have, say, a bus or a tractor trailer or something that they need to extricate out, these guys have gone through more schooling. So on top of their advanced, their EMT, their paramedic, if they're both, their fire certs, they also have to certify, recertify in all of these specialties as well. All right. So to work at that station, you have to have these qualifications on top of everything else you do. So Station 85, which is down in Foxborough, is our hazardous material station. So that truck runs out, our aerial ladder runs out of there, but also our hazmat unit. So we have a hazmat unit that they will jump onto and take the truck and the hazmat unit together and respond to. So I don't know if you heard about the power line across the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
That unfortunately for Bountiful was one of their power lines. Our firefighters were on that power line as it was on fire watching it. And as it started to, they watched it kind of lean down, watched the train catch it. Watch the semi truck catch it. The semi truck went up in the air, came down on the median, which caused the concrete median to break and mm-hmm. then spread all over the freeway, mm-hmm. which then caused all the car crashes. Meanwhile, then we had to send our hazardous materials team out there to clean up the saddle tanks of the semi that was ruptured. So it just was an event that created. So another event that really a lot of our stations had to respond to on top of everything else was going on. Here's the breakdown of calls per city. North Salt Lake in 2021, the second biggest pie. A lot of Bountiful is the assisted living centers, is what we respond to in Bountiful. Obviously, a little larger population too, but assisted living because of that. And your house. These are our times. We're a very data-driven department. So we look at our times and want to make sure that we keep those times within. And these are nationally are a little higher than we'd like, but a lot of these things also include responding to a call without lights and sirens, right? Or say our ambulance comes up from Station 85 to a medical up on the east side up here because Station 82 on Eaglewood Drive is out on a call. That, and they're not going lights and sirens or they get stuck by a train. These times reflect some of that stuff too, so that's why. This is about a 2-minute video. If you'd like to watch it, it's great information. If that's up to you, we're almost done. If you want to, but I don't know if you want to click on that just to see if you want. This is National Fire Protection 1710, and it kind of gives a great overview of what we.
But what is it, and what does it mean for our community? Your worst nightmare. In just 3 minutes, a fire can grow 16 times larger than when it started, and it continues to grow bigger and faster every second. Once the clock starts ticking, there's a shrinking window of opportunity to save lives and property. You want a full crew of firefighters to put it out quickly, or you may suffer a catastrophic loss. But how many are enough? 15, 20, 40? How do you decide? Fortunately, there's an internationally recognized industry standard. It's called NFPA 1710, and it's based on scientific evidence and research that establishes how many firefighters are needed to put out each fire and rescue anyone trapped. At a fire scene, you want a firefighter doing every job that needs to be done to save you and your house. And at a fire, there's a lot that needs to be done. Like stretching the hose, hooking to a hydrant, searching for trapped people, venting the hot gases, and much more. For a low-hazard single-family house fire, NFPA 1710 specifies a minimum of 15 firefighters dispatched in the initial alarm. At an open-air strip shopping center or garden apartment fire, the standard specifies a minimum of 28 firefighters dispatched in the first alarm. And for fires in high-rise buildings at least 7 stories tall, the data show that the initial dispatch should be for a minimum of 43 firefighters, and that fire departments should send additional firefighters to situations that are beyond the capability of the initial alarm. Regardless of the type of property, 1710 also sets the time of arrival on scene within 4 minutes for the first engine with 4 firefighters. The 1710 standard for both response time and crew size is based on scientific evidence, not opinion. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, known as NIST, and its partners conducted extensive research to document the optimal crew sizes for various types of structures. As a decision maker, you and firefighters share a common goal. Everyone gets out alive. So when a house is on fire, just remember it takes a minimum of 15 firefighters to put it out. And the quicker the response time, the better the outcome for everyone. For more information, talk to your local firefighters. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.
I don't know if you're aware of the amount of apartments that have been going up.
Really?
Yeah. We have a lot of apartments in all the cities that we do, and it's becoming very popular to build, right? We normally never have 28 firefighters on. We have four person in an engine, but on most of the time we're only running 3 in an engine. That's our minimum staff. It's just a good explanation of it. I mean, you take what you want from it. I've never been one to go, you know, this is law, we should live by it.
That's helpful.
Yeah. So just some of the non-emergency stuff that we do. CERT, Community Emergency Response Team. We hold classes. Bountiful City does a pretty good job of, we just facilitate it. We don't teach it. We don't do anything. They teach their own. But any of North Salt Lake or any of the citizens in any of the cities that we do is always welcome to sign up for those. That's a great class. We teach first aid, we teach CPR, any public education tours, things like that. Those are daily, especially coming from schools and stuff. Our fire prevention, fire marshal's office, we do fire investigations. Anytime we have a fire, we send out an investigator to look at that. Plan reviews, and things like that. So we're like I said, right now, Casey's left, we're looking for the fire marshal. So our stations, our headquarters station is Station 81. This is where the admin is. We have a paramedic engine out of that, and an ambulance, a brush truck, and mobile command, and the battalion chief. The brush truck is not staffed. The ambulance staffing jumps to the brush truck. So if we have a brush fire, like on the freeway or on the tracks or something, that ambulance staff will jump to the brush truck, then that ambulance is no longer in service. So we jump staff those two, but the engine and the ambulance are staffed all the time. So you're aware of Station 82 in Eaglewood, also an ALS or a paramedic engine, an ambulance and a brush truck out of there. So Station 83 is our newest station, which is what we bonded for. That's our other engine. We have 3 paramedic engines, and that's our other paramedic, or our third paramedic engine, the ambulance, brush truck, and then, like I said, our technical rescue. The neat thing about this fire station is when we build it, Chief Bassett was able to obtain the 343 South. 343 is the number of firefighters that we lost in 9/11, and so we have a pretty impressive, we have a piece of the tower in there and a memorial dedicated to that. So if you ever get a chance, stop by. It's pretty neat to see. So our Mueller Park Station, we have a BLS engine up there. It's always staffed with 3. We don't have, and a brush truck. We don't have an ambulance staffed up that one. We have a bariatric ambulance that if we need that for anything, they'll just staff that and come down to that call. but that's only in a case of need. And believe me, it's needed. That bariatric ambulance is fairly busy. So, but that is a wildland urban interface engine. So it can go off-road and it has the pump and roll capability. So as they're driving, it can spray water as well. So I'll show you that in a second. And then Station 85 down in Foxborough is our truck, our ladder truck, and then our hazardous materials, and it has an ambulance and brush truck. So that's how those stations are structured. Our newest fire engine, it comes out of Eaglewood. That's our newest fire engine. And full complement, it's a type 1 structural fire engine. That's, you guys know, you have to do your NIMS training and that, you know. When you have to do that, this is when you start getting into type 1, you know, your type 1 front loader and things like that. So we have those as well. So we have three ALS engines, like I said, one at 81s, one at 82s, and one at 83s.
Do you want to talk about pushing the engine in?
You got to do
it. I just thought that was neat. So, in the days of the horse-drawn wagon, and I always never let the facts get in the way of a good story. So, in the old days when they would have a horse-drawn fire wagon go out, they'd have to disconnect the horses, and then they'd push the wagon back into the fire station. So every time they get a new fire truck, that's part of the tradition, is they push it in. Of course, they weigh a lot, so they kind of drive them.
We use a little bit of the accelerator on it.
So we had this ceremony where we pushed it into the station. And
yeah,
it's kind of a neat tradition.
So every time we get a new fire engine, it gets pushed in. We do a push-in ceremony to keep that tradition. A lot of tradition in the fire service, and that's just one that continues on. So. Our ladder truck is what we call the T-Rex. It's a 115-foot aerial articulating ladder. And it's once you get up there, it's 115 feet. It's pretty high, right? So my only claim to fame is I was driving it when this picture was taken. And it kind of put me back in the days when I wanted to be a firefighter. But I don't get that opportunity anymore. They don't want me around the fire. So it's got EMS equipment and everything it needs to. So we also have a reserve ladder when that's in the shop. So this is our type 3, what we call type 3, type 1, but this is what's up at Station 84. You can see it has a different look to it, but it's our urban interface engine. So, and that's staffed with three firefighters a lot of time. This is a brush truck. So what you look at, so obviously we can go off-road on the two, you know, up on the pipeline and everything like that with this vehicle. Our battalion chief truck, you'll see this around town. They drive this around town. They're stationed at Ewan's, but they do drive around to all the fire stations and on the calls and stuff. So, what our ambulance looks like, I did change it. The nice thing about being the fire chief is you have some. So, I'm a big red guy, so we switched all to a red fire or red ambulance. So, it's probably my only thing I'll ever do. They can go, what did Dane bring? Dane gave us an all red fire.
Good job.
Yeah, I know. These are we have two utilities. You can see we have a stretcher on the back one. We utilize these up by the B and a lot of the areas that we can access if we can with them that we can put a patient in and take them off. In the wintertime, they work as plows for us. So we try to use them year-round, but we do get a lot of use out of them. So. Mobile command, anytime if you remember during the landslide, this was up there for a couple days. So we utilize this. A lot of police departments use it. They have full control over it as well. We house it, we wash it, we keep it clean. But if the police need it, we'll get it to them, and then they can set up if they need to for a lost child. We've done it for, Centerville does it for their DUI stops. So it's just...
Wasn't this donated by Chevron?
Yeah,
Holly.
Yep. So instead of paying the fines to the federal government, they donated this to us.
They actually do a lot of work.
So it wasn't altruistic.
So what they'll do is they'll put a lot of time
out. Just kind of real quick on that, it just kind of shows you what our firefighter Jake Atkinson here, what it costs to outfit a firefighter, and then just some of the the weight, right? So you were about 65 more pounds with his full turnout gear on. Mm-hmm. And some of these costs are duplicated, so you're not seeing that, but just a station uniform is almost $500, right? And that's because it's fire retardant, right? The fun thing is when they go on fire, they take off this bad shirt and use a cotton t-shirt underneath. So I don't know why it's fire retardant, but we have to do that. So our wildland gear is obviously different than our structural gear, but you can just kind of see some pounds and then some of the costs of what it is to you know, when we talk about budget, yeah, that's kind of what we're looking for too. So not cheap. When I got on fire service, they told me to go down in this closet and they said, see if you can find some gear that fits you. And I did, and the coat was a little longer. Obviously, I'm not a 6 foot person, which I've always wanted to be. Now everything's custom to these guys. They get.
Guess
they
you
get
can't
fitted,
be
so.
Everything you want to be.
EMS gear, just obviously this was a COVID. This is what our COVID looks like when we had COVID, when we had anybody else that didn't have COVID. But just kind of shows you what our cardiac monitors, our AEDs cost. Our video laryngoscopes, which when we intubate somebody, if they can't breathe, we put a tube down them. We have a video laryngoscope that we can see before you would have to visually see with your, the vocal cords before you slid the tube down. Now it will do it on a video and we can see it like on an LED. And AutoPulse does CPR automatically for us. So we can strap that on. It'll do CPR automatically for us so we can take another person away to do something else. So this kind of shows you some of the cost of our EMS. So. That's it.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, feel free to email me or reach out, but I really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you. I love this department. It's such a great department, and I'm grateful to work with such professionals. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I want to make money.
I have one comment I'd just like to make. Most of my young 85 years have been in California and Oregon and some in Washington. And I was on the biological end of it, but worked for the Forest Service and plants and wild animals and how we could do things that use the fire. Well, it changed dramatically because I think in that brushy, hilly country, they have all these administrative costs, and probably the costs are 1,000 times more than they showed on here. But they've put so much effort now on pre-fire, how to prevent fires from happening this time of the year. If you wait until August, it's too late to do anything about what's out there. It's there and it's going to burn in most cases. And the reason I bring this up, I live now on a condominium up on that hill right here, and there's a couple trails that go down from there. Wild Rose Trail, I don't know if any of you ever walked those.
Yeah.
And they got 30-inch diameter gas pipes going underneath them, which doesn't help the situation. But that, because of the type of spring we've had with a lot of periodic rain, it's been excellent for vegetation growth. And there's a half a dozen homes along that trail where the vegetation is about up to my belly right now, and it's all nice and green. And that's fine for wildlife and all that, and hiking. But as soon as that starts drying out, you got a big potential problem of burning a half a dozen homes. Mm-hmm. The vegetation comes up with about 20 feet, 25 feet, and you have winds along here that I don't know if anybody else has as many wind, and you don't have time to send a fire truck up there. In a matter of a minute or two, someone comes in there with a cigarette or something and throws it in that dry stuff, and the wind's blowing 20 or 30 miles an hour, it's gone. The houses are going to be gone. And then it's amazing that I watched some of those fires in California, and you got a house here and a house right next to you, and that one house starts burning, and all of a sudden the other house starts burning. I mean, just so much heat. Well, you know all that. I know, but it just explodes. And so anyway, this young lady here got me to discuss that part at one of our meetings, and we can do perhaps something about it. We did things in California like where it was really brushy. We got two D6 casts, and pulled a chain between them and knocked down all the vegetation, and then came in and raked the vegetation up. It wasn't a cheap aspect. The Forest Service had to cut back on a lot of that stuff because it was costing them too much. Well, it wasn't too much because they ended up with big wildfires. Well, we tried to have controlled burns in the fall. It was a little different situation. We knocked down the brush, and then we touched that dry brush off, and there was a snow line right above us. So in most cases, we never had anything go wild, but it does happen. But anyway, my thoughts here was perhaps, and I'm just talking off the top of my head, more pre-effort. If you can stop the fire from ever happening, you're saving lives and dollars and all that stuff. But it sort of takes a change of mind to do that, and how much it does cost. That trail I'm talking about, I don't know what it would take a crawler type of tractor to come in there and knock that vegetation down when it starts to dry out. And then that's not the end of it. You got to get the vegetation out of there too. So it's not a simple process, but it could have some thinking. I think in some of your issues there that you showed, it was included in there, but it wasn't, you know, brought up like it is in California and Oregon. That's a major issue there now, because they have so darn many fires and so many homes burning up. Anyway,
the truth of the matter is that his gray hair comes from that whole hill.
I do not sleep in the summertime very well, that's for sure. So I love the rain in the spring and the early summer, but that's the cause of it, is it does create more vegetation.
Yeah.
We just rely really heavily on the residents to have that 30 feet of defensible space, because that's going to give us that time to come in and protect that house.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And that's something that we will talk about. But
yeah.
That's the best way to do it, is have a resident have that.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll reassemble for city council.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a balance.
It's just a question of when.
Not when I think drink here, sorry. Hey, thanks for moving.
I follow you. Yes, you're right. We will. That's going to happen.
Thanks so much.
You were drifting off a little bit. You weren't snoring too bad.
I did.
Nobody.
I've never in my life, hi, gone to sleep when I'm ready.
Thanks, Chief. Great job.
Really?
I wish I could sleep better.
But I can in a movie.
My kids won't take me to the museum. I zonk out. I could zonk out. It's the best sleep I get.
It's got to be a really good movie. Halfway in, I'm sleepy.
Yeah, they'll all talk about a movie that a home. And yeah, Dad slept through the whole thing. It's
like, so funny.
Good.
Hey, how is your daughter doing in school? Lots of school.
Good. She just finished her first year.
Yeah.
Just took her I don't know if you call them finals in law school, too. She feels really good about it. She's
good.
Doing an internship at a family law firm, a small family boutique law firm. They call it a boutique law firm, just a 2-person show.
Oh.
But I think she has really taken an interest in this family law, and I'm kind of glad. I don't want her to get into criminal law too much.
Yeah.
But she's a soft-hearted person, and there's so many times that I think people need good family advice, especially in abusive situations. And she, you know, her husband has a good job, so she won't really. I could see her being the kind of person that would just say, "Hey, how can I help?" Almost public interest type law.
Yeah.
Which if I ever would have gone to law school,
mm-hmm.
I think.